Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
You've got a heart of stone. When you said what you were worth, like I was nothing. Your free dress, like all the rest. Fashion. You got cheek, you got ass, but you ain't got class. You've got a heart of stone. You've got a heart of stone. All the guys that you've been through doesn't flatter. You can try.
Starlight Campbell Band, Heart of Stone, released on 3rd of November 2018. That's next week.
And that's us.
It is. Now, I hope you've done plenty of research into this track, darling.
I have. You see, my notes are really, like,
extensive.
Detailed. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny because we don't often play our stuff on the radio. But because we're releasing it this weekend coming up, and we're playing Wangaratta Festival on Saturday night.
That's right. In Australia, mate.
Yeah, in Australia. That's going to be great. We're also releasing the 180-gram dual vinyl.
Dual?
Yeah.
Like it.
So it's been cut at Abbey Road by the legendary Miles Showell there and...
mastered by John Astley from Close to the Edge. He's worked with everybody, Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, The Who.
Yeah.
I mean, we're very excited. So the single is Heart of Stone. And it was recorded during the Blueberry Pie sessions.
It was.
It's just that we didn't put it on the CD. So you can get it now on the album, on vinyl.
You can, and that's the only physical copy. It's, exactly. Of course, downloadable off the web, as anything else, from our Bandcamp site, which is music.starlight-campbell.com. That's another thing. And you can order the vinyl from there as well and pre-order it. And, well, in fact, you can order it now, can't you, straight away?
So that's really... The exciting thing is that the Arts Council and the Isle of Man actually have given us funding to release Blueberry Pie on vinyl. So thank them very much for their support. The single we're releasing, which is obviously to support the album being released, and also the fact that we're going to be touring the UK in December.
Indeed.
So, on the Tuesday, the 11th of December, we're going to be down at the Tuesday Music Nightclub in Colston, which is south of London. And then on Thursday, the 13th of December, we're going up north to the Iron Road in Pershore. On Friday, the 14th of December, we're going home to North Manchester, to Bury, where you were born.
Yeah.
We're going to be playing a gig at the Met, and we're going to be supported by our great friends, the Mighty Revelators.
That's going to be very fun. It's going to be lots of revelation afterwards, I can tell you that.
We're going to have so, honestly, we just cry with laughter, those guys. We love them so much. Now, that's a really beautiful venue because we're actually going to be recording a video of that night and the live sound as well.
Yeah.
So if you want to come and join us at that gig, that's fantastic. And also the following week, we're going to be in Bannerman's in Edinburgh on the Wednesday. On the Thursday, which is the 20th, we're at the Queen Vic in South Shields. And we're going to be supported by a band called Old Man's Baccy.
Got to watch those boys.
Exactly. And then on Saturday the 22nd, we're at Saltburn Blues Club.
Which is going to be marvellous, yeah.
So we're just dabbling in. We just wanted to go and play a few little key places in the UK for over a couple of weeks and say hello and meet everyone, you know. And then obviously got dates for next year. But so that's really it. And so it's all very, very exciting. And I feel a bit surreal at the moment. Because I know that there's going to be lots of adventures in lots of people that we're going to meet, you know.
Yeah,
and I'm really excited and I'm just almost holding my breath.
I'm really looking forward to meeting all the guys out in Australia, Wangaratta. We've got Matt Schofield. I've never met Matt, so we'll be seeing him on the Friday night. He's headlining the Friday. We're headlining the Saturday, which is going to be great.
And then we get to play with Clayton Doley. He's going to come and join our band as well on the Saturday night.
Remarkable player, yeah. So he's going to be playing. Johnny Henderson can't make it that night, so we've got Clayton, who's going to be playing, who's, you know, probably the best Hammond player in Australia, so I believe.
Wow,
you know he's a great guy. But just before we finish on this, of course, I think we should talk a little bit about the production because I always do on all the tracks.
Oh, that's true.
And the fact that we produced it, it was recorded virtually live. The guitar was live all the way through. It was one take, which is, you know, it just sort of happened for some reason. And I was using a little Tweed Deluxe amp and. What was I using? A Les Paul, it was a Les Paul Deluxe.
Wow.
And double cut thing, that was great. Bass, your normal bass stack. And then the Hammond was all done with our M100 Hammond and Leslie 145. So it was all mic'd up and stuff, and very simply, four mics on the kit. I think we tried to get a really original sound, which we did for the rest of the album, really.
Yeah.
And we've now been plotting on the new record.
I know, it's very exciting as well.
I just put the pickups in the other last week in the Mozrite, so we've got a 12 string and 6 string double neck.
It sounds mighty, actually. I must admit. I mean, a double neck's a bit of a strange beast. It looks something out of Greek mythology. It takes a little while to get used to.
Especially the Mozrite. It looks like it's been blown with a hot air gun. It's all melted, rather like a Gaudi building. You know, it's like a very odd looking thing, but it sounds great. And because it's odd, you know, it sort of just fits in with our general odd thing. But you know, we're really looking forward to recording the next album and stuff, which. We're going to be doing
and
very
do come and join us and come and meet us out on the road because, you know, that's what it's all about, hanging out, playing and kicking the good music.
It sure is. And talking about kicking.
Rod Stewart, or should I say Sir Rod, and Every Picture Tells a Story from his third studio album of the same name, released in May 1971 on the Mercury record label.
Produced by Rod and recorded at Morgan Studios, that wonderful Cadac console again.
Mm-hmm.
People used to flock there apparently because they had this Cadac, very clean sounding thing, you know. But that record... to me, the whole album, and we've played a couple of tracks of it so far. It's one of our favourites. It's up there with all of them we play. We virtually play it at least once or twice a month.
It's just fantastic. Yeah. It makes me feel happy every time you play it. It lifts my spirit.
Well, it does, and this is the first track. And when it kicks off, there's such confusion. Well, it's not confusion. It's the fact that the counting, everybody falls into the track. You know, at the beginning there, it starts off with that 12-string guitar. And then, which is on the edge of being in tune, which, of course, they always are 12 strings, really. But and then, I think it's a drop D as well. boing. And then everybody falls into the track. And after about two or three bars, they all sort of get into it.
They do. And Ronnie Wood's playing a bass on that, and it's a little bit scrappy to start with as well. And like I've heard it more now when I've listened through the headphones. And there's one bit as well when Rod goes to sing and he stops. He goes, and then he starts again.
That's right, yeah.
Do you know, and I didn't hear that. And it's incredible what I listen to at different times, as it were. It's perfectly imperfect. It's amazing.
That's right. And this track, it sounds a lot better, actually, on the vinyl. When you hear it like this in complete digital sort of, it's a bit crunchy, and it's not as gritty, it's not as beautiful as the vinyl. This is one of those albums that you've just got to listen to on vinyl. It's amazing. The drums as well, you know, great. It's Kenny Jones, isn't it, on drums. It's basically
Mickey Waller.
Oh, Mickey Waller on this,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. So,
do you know what's really weird? That just before the song finished, I thought, I'll just double check who's playing bass and who's playing drums. Now, I know that there are loads of different people playing on the album, but on this particular track, it's Mickey Waller.
Well, you know, the thing I was about to comment on the drum, the tom sound, I was about to say that it doesn't sound like his normal drum sound.
What, isn't that weird? That's weird.
Because when you listen later in the album, I think it was probably recorded. It sounds a lot cleaner and a lot more. And, you know, I mean, Kenny Jones is a great drummer, and he was the perfect in the Faces. But this was, it does have a slightly different feeling. I was about to say, yeah, there we are.
Get you.
That's all good.
It's really, that's odd. You know, and talking about Rod, his name is Roderick David Stewart, just so you know. CBE.
Is that right?
Indeed, and he was born at home at number 507 Archway Road, Highgate, in North London, on the 10th of January, 1945.
10th of January, day after me?
Yep, during World War Two.
Right, so he's born the same date then as David Bowie.
I'd not clicked.
Yeah, but I didn't know that.
What's going on with this kind of birthday thing? Yeah. It's weird. Is you've got the same, you and Jimmy Page have the same birthday.
We do.
Rod Stewart and David Bowie the same.
10th, yeah.
And it's weird. And Rod Stewart's family ran a newsagent.
No.
Yeah.
So and my mum and dad had a newsagent. Yeah. Wow.
It's weird.
That's incredible.
And go on.
Just going back to this track, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it was engineered by a guy called Mike Boback, who's responsible for some of the best-sounding records from the early 70s. Cat Stevens, Rod Stewart, The Kinks.
Yeah.
What else is there?
Carly Simon.
There's some great stuff. And I think that board and that, you know, Morgan Studios, it was like that time that it was really sort of coming together. People were using Olympic, of course, and these others. But Morgan really, you know, they really captured a lot of the artists that were wanting this really crisp sound. And even there you can hear a little bit of overload, but it does sound great, you know. It's a great sounding record. And finally, I've got to talk about Ronnie Wood, because he co-wrote this, didn't he, with Rod Stewart?
He did, yeah.
But Rod's his guitar playing is great. When it comes to his rhythm playing is sensational. I love him, you know. I just
so
love
do
him.
I.
I run the risk of losing you, and that's worse.
Buzzcocks, Ever Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have, released a single in 1978 on United Artists label and can also be found on the album Love Bites, produced by Martin Rushen.
Oh, really? Yes. Very efficient of you, darling.
It was, yeah.
The Buzzcocks, it's one of those bands that I don't really know, and yet when I hear that song, I know it's them. You know, it's an interesting thing, but I didn't know they were formed in Bolton.
That's right.
In 1976, by singer-songwriter and guitarist Pete Shelley and singer-songwriter Howard Devoto.
Who went on to Magazine, of course.
That's just a bit weird, you know. I had no idea.
Well, these guys were kicking around when I was, you know, very much in the music scene in Manchester, you know. And because I'd basically just started playing guitar full-time then. At that point, and when we did Deep Lavelle Festival, I remember going into a teepee with them, smoking things that I shouldn't have been smoking at that time. Yes, so there we are in a teepee at Deep Lavelle. So we know. And Richard Henry, who is our guitar dealer, a guy in Manchester, a cool guy, he's got a pair of studios, very very interesting guy, and he's their guitar tech.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so they are. So that's a bit of knowledge here.
No, I didn't know that they were a really important influence on the Manchester music scene. And they kind of... And they had, like, an independent record label movement, didn't they? They were, like, punk rock, power pop and sort of pop punk.
Yeah, because it was very punky, but sort of... It was more melodic. It's sort of Manchester punk, I could call it.
Oh, yeah.
Or Bolton punk.
Yeah.
If you can have a Bolton
I
punk.
I get that. Do you know how they got their name as well?
Go on.
It's quite interesting. They chose the name Buzzcocks after reading the headline, "It's the Buzzcock," in a review of the TV series Rock Follies in Time Out magazine.
No.
Yeah. So the buzz is the excitement of playing on stage, and cock is a Manchester slang word meaning mate, as in friend, buddy. So well, I thought that was great, and they thought it kind of captured the feel and the excitement of the Sex Pistols and the kind of fledgling punk scene that had just started to form. So I just thought it was really cool. And then so... and sometime during November in 1977, the band were watching the musical Guys and Dolls in the TV lounge of a guest house in Edinburgh. And part of this film, there's a dialogue and it says, "Have you ever fallen in love with someone you shouldn't have?" And that was in the film. So the next day, Pete wrote the lyrics of the song, sat in a van outside the post office.
Well, they are. And, you know, and Manchester, and I know I'm from Bury because, you know, Bury, it's like 5 miles from Bolton, and I went to Bolton School, so I know this area really well, you know, North Manchester. And it's been, you know, remarkable in its production of bands over the years. There's been a torrent of incredible bands, you know, from New Order to M People to... 808 Stay, all that, you know, all that more electronic stuff, and 10cc and the Hollies, and I mean, it's a huge amount of talent that has come out of that dreary and drizzly city. The heart of the Industrial Revolution, computers were designed
in
Manchester. The internet was really started in Manchester. So it's incredible, you know.
But the thing that Manchester gives you, and the whole of Northern England, I think, was when I went up there to Salford in 1990 to study media and performance. And it really struck me that Manchester people and the people all in the north, they really allowed you to be who you wanted to be, who you knew you were. But it gave you a canvas where you had permission to be exactly, do anything you wanted. Obviously, you know, and it just allowed you to grow and develop. You weren't overly controlled. And I think that also with the bad weather... you had the sunshine on the inside, and I think it was far more productive. No, but I think you're a lot more productive because you haven't got sort of like the drugginess of the heat. Because when we were in Spain, it was very hot, and it's actually quite difficult to work when it's too hot.
Yeah, you do get very lethargic, don't
you? That manana thing, you can kind of understand it, but I think when the temperature gets cold and stuff, you get really focused in, and there's a definite thing. I think it's the weather that really helps your creativity.
Well, that's probably it.
So get in there, love.
Stand up and walk out on me. Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, hide it now. All I need is my brother. I say I'm gonna get high. I don't even say it. Certain it happens all the time, yeah.
What do you see when you turn out the light?
I can't tell you, but it sure feels like mad. Don't you know I'm gonna make it with my friends? I promise myself I'll get by. Said I'm gonna try it with. Yeah.
The beautiful, the wonderful Joe Cocker, with a little help from my friends, that was released as a single in October 1968 on the Regal Zonophone label in the UK and A&M Records in the USA. And later on, it was released as on his debut album, with a little help from my friends, in May 1969.
Well, fuzz.
Really?
Of course. It's Jimmy Page. You've got to watch your head on that microphone there. Fuzz. Jimmy Page played lead guitar on that. You can hear that double stop bend thing going on. Classic Page. Crunchy sound. Great, great, great. And Chris Staton played bass on that, I think he plays now with Eric Clapton all the time.
Right, get yeah. you.
And it was produced by Denny Cordell. Denny Cordell was the mentor for Tony Visconti. And Tony Visconti was working for him. And it was Denny Cordell actually got him over from New York and brought him across with his guitars. And Tony Visconti was playing guitar on that album as well. So there you are. Even though Tony Visconti was a bass player, and of course went on to produce Bowie and many, many other people. So there you are.
That's kind of like... Suddenly the world shrinks, doesn't it, down into your living room and the pub next door.
Well, even more does it shrink, because the Buzzcocks, the last track, and this one were both recorded at Olympic Studios.
Okay.
Right? And
you
didn't know this. I am indeed. I am.
I am.
I am broad today with my knowledge of these things. And of course, the track with Rod Stewart, Every Pitch Tells a Story. The backing vocalists were Madeline Bell and Maggie Bell, and you can hear one of them. I'm not quite sure which one it is. I think it might be Maggie Bell on the Rod Stewart track, but Madeline Bell sang backing vocals on this and on the Rod Stewart album.
Really?
Every Pitch Tells a Story. Yeah.
All right, because I thought it was Sue and Sonny as well doing backing vocals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which was really interesting, because I'd never heard of Sue and Sonny before, because, you know, the backing vocals on this track make me giggle because they're slightly kind of out of tune, but not. I don't know what it is. It's just something very, almost like, I don't know, like it just makes me laugh. And when I looked into it, they were actually original founder members of Brotherhood of Man.
No. Yeah. Now you got me there, sunshine. The Brotherhood of Man.
Exactly. And they actually
did. I've played guitar with the Brotherhood of Man.
I know.
I've played guitar with the Brotherhood of Man when I was doing session work. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. And I remember doing that gig. It was an interesting gig.
I didn't
think
you were going to say that, actually. You've confessed live on air. I think I'm very brave of you. But also, because I think that's... there are plenty more stories that you haven't told or talked about yet.
Indeed.
I know. Not all of them, I know, I'm sure. But also, so Sue and Sonny were doing backing vocals for like David Bowie as well, you know, and Elton John and Dusty Springfield. So when I was looking into Joe Cocker, because, you know what, I really love him. In fact, we've got his photo at that iconic moment when he played Woodstock Festival in 1969. To when we've talked about it, that epitomizes the ultimate in performance. To perform a song for me, that's probably the best performance I've won, if not the best, one of the top five ever.
Definitely
ever.
Yeah. It's and because, you know, he's very awkward in his movements, and, you know, but he gives it everything. When he does that scream, you know, that's fantastic. And the funny thing of the Woodstock version is that it's the two guys who are doing the backing vocal in falsetto, and that really is funny.
That is
but
funny.
It's a great version. It's a great version. And that's the definitive version of that song, even though Jimmy Page wasn't playing on it. You know, because by then he was up to his neck in Led Zeppelin.
So you've got to watch that. If you haven't seen it, you've got to watch Joe Cocker at Woodstock 1969. But what I didn't realise with him as well is that, you know, so he grew up, he was born in Sheffield, and I didn't know that.
Yep.
So, and guess what his parents' names were?
Go on.
Harold and Madge Cocker. How cool is that? That's a proper British set of names there. Harold and Madge.
Yeah.
So when he was growing up, his influence was like Ray Charles and Lonnie Donegan, and he formed his first band when he was 16, and they were called the Cavaliers. But he left school, you know, and he trained as a gas fitter. So he was pursuing his music career and earning a living at the same time. So, you know, he got himself a trade, and he went for a while under the name Vance Arnold. So he's like, yeah, so it was a combination, I think, with there was an Elvis Presley film, and I think he thought that the name of the character was Vince, but it was but he thought it was Vance, but the actual character was Vince. I'm confused now. So anyway, so he went around like Vance Arnold and the Avengers, and they played loads of clubs in Sheffield for a while, and they opened for the Rolling Stones in Sheffield City Hall.
Yes.
Which I think, can you imagine? Absolutely wonderful. And then in 1964, he signed a recording contract, a solo act with Decca, released his first single, and he did a cover of the Beatles' I'll Cry Instead with Jimmy Page and
Big Jim Sullivan.
Oh, get away!
I knew that. I knew that already. Oh,
guitar. But sadly, it was
a flop.
Well, I'm
reading the Jimmy Page book at the moment, so I know about it. Yeah, sorry.
Darn it. I know, but the thing is, you know what it does say, though? You can have Jimmy Page and Big Jim on a track, and it doesn't necessarily mean that outstanding musicians will make a song a hit. It has to, the song has to connect.
Well, it's the song, and I mean, and that vocal performance, I mean, this is his crowning glory, as far as I'm concerned, Joe Cocker, you know.
And I think just one more step on, just so we can get to where he really starts to connect in, just as his background research, so we kind of have a background feel about where Joe Cocker came from. So he formed Joe Cocker's Blues Band and then went on to form the Grease Band with Chris Stainton, and then he met Denny Cordell, who produced Procol Harum and stuff.
Yeah, that's
so,
right, yeah.
So it was all that kind of time, and it's just nice, a little bit background story. But all I can say is that guy, I think it was Denny who persuaded the guy at Woodstock to book them and flew them in.
Well, if you haven't seen the footage of Joe Cocker at Woodstock, you must see it. It's a must-see thing for all music lovers.
Schoolhouse outhouse on Highway Number 19.
Ike and Tina Turner, Nutbush City Limits, released June 1973 on United Artists, shortly before a separation from their then-husband and musical partner, Ike Turner.
Written by Tina Turner.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. She made a bobbit out of that.
Brilliant, I thought, yeah.
Ike Turner, you know, a troublesome bloke, you know, a lot of controversy with him. He produced a great record, though. The thing about that, when you listen to it, the Americans have so much more. It's more smooth. It's like it's mellifluous, isn't it? You know, beautiful
great
arrangement.
Word, that.
Yeah. And, you know, nice compression, very good, lovely synth solo, great fuzz sound on the guitar, you know.
Never.
Yeah, but that's it was, you know, it's a great song. And Stuart Sheffield, our old sound engineer and recording engineer from Whitefire days, when I first kicked off with my own band, he used to love this track, and he used to put it on and do a sound check every night to it live.
Really?
Yeah, and it was one of his favourite tracks. So there we are, Stuart Sheffield.
I love this track because the bass just kicks ass, basically, isn't it? It's really, really cool. So you've got, what I love about this track, though, you've got, like, the Queen of Rock and Roll, and then you've got Ike Turner, who's known as the cornerstone of modern-day rock and roll. And you know what? The dynamics between those two was just incredible, the chemistry. And, of course, you're going to get some... you're going to get that tension between them because they were so dynamic together, weren't they? And they produced some beautiful stuff. What I didn't realise with Ike Turner, though, was that when he was 8 years old, you know, he used to hang out at his local radio station, WROX, in Alcazar. Oh, it was located in the Alcazar Hotel in downtown Clarksdale. And that was one of the very first radio stations to employ black DJs. And so there was a DJ called John Frisella, and he got Ike to put on tunes, and he ended up going across the road to getting coffees and stuff and left Ike like spinning tunes on the radio, and he ended up getting a job in radio with presenting and stuff, and he got
like
to listen
BB King.
Yeah, but got to listen to all the new tracks.
Wow.
So you've got that, and on the other side, Tina Turner, that's her stage name. Her real name is Anna May Book.
No.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Neither did I.
She was a young nurse's assistant, and she ended up dating Raymond Hill, who was a sax player in Ike Turner's band.
No.
Yeah, and she had a child with Raymond Hill, and they ended up... when she used to go out and see the band, during a break in the middle of a gig, the drummer, who was called Eugene, we love that name, Eugene Washington, he gave Anna May the mic and said to sing a few songs, so she ended up singing with the band. And then Ike Turner got her to do a demo. And the way, I mean, and this is just really weird because basically he'd written this song for a guy called Art Lassiter called A Fool in Love. But Art didn't show up at the studio when he'd booked some expensive recording time. So Anna May, a.k.a. Tina Turner, stepped in and recorded the demo. And then this guy said, she's great, don't get Art singing her. He gave him a 20,000 advance and bought the rights to the song, and that's how it all started.
Wow.
But Ike trademarked her name so she couldn't run off with it.
Surprise. Can you see them? See
listening to the Supertones Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was Funboy 3, Our Lips Are Sealed, released as a single on the 29th of April in 1983 on the Chris's label. And also you could find it on their second and final, sadly, second studio album, Waiting, that was released a couple of months before. And the big reveal and surprise about that song and about the album, Waiting, is that it was produced by David Byrne.
Wow. Talking Heads, David Byrne.
David Byrne of Talking Heads.
Wow, well. And the song was written by Jane Wedlin of the Go-Go's.
That's
and
right.
Terry Hall.
Yep.
Right. And was it the Go-Go's that did it first?
Yeah. So Jane, they released their version a couple of years before in 1981 and it only got to number 47 in the UK charts. But it did go to number 2 in Australia, and it was number 3 in Canada, and number 10 in the US Disco Top 80 charts. So that was okay. But with the Funboy 3 version, which is a bit sad, it only got released in the UK and Ireland. But it got to number 7 in the UK charts and number 13 in Ireland. But
well, it's one of my favourite pop songs of all time.
I love that song.
It's a great sound. I love that guitar in the background. I love... And it was, again, and I don't do this on purpose, I swear to you, but it was recorded at Wessex then, where Sex Pistols recorded and Queen did Sheer Heart Attack and various other... But it was a Cadillac console again. And I don't know what it is. My ears must just pick up these sounds. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful recording. And it's a great song. It's very dark. Mm. And, you know, was it in 2000, Rolling Stone magazine voted it in the top 100 pop
true.
Songs of all time or something?
Yeah, yeah. Funny, isn't it?
And I thought, I agree, it's a wonderful song. But it's, you know, it's got some atmosphere about it. It might be that David Byrne thing going on, but great, you know?
Well, what I was quite interested about is that she met Terry Hall when the Specials were... the Go-Go's were supporting the Specials when they were touring the United States in 1980. And that's how they... I think they had a bit of a thing. And they ended up sort of writing a song together. But what these boys, though, they're all like Terry Hall. And then you've got Neville Staple and Linville Golding. They were like Coventry boys.
Wow.
So it's that, and they formed Funboy 3 after they left the Specials. But they only lasted a couple of years. But they released a couple of albums, went and did a tour over the States, and then split up.
Well, it was a great band, and I enjoyed it, you know.
I liked their attitude as well. You know, you see them on Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
They were cool, and they just had something really, really different, and I really liked them.
Yeah, great band.
Thank you.
Kraftwerk and the Model, or Das Model, recorded in 1978 and first released as a 7-inch single in Germany in 1978. And it's written by musicians Ralph Hutter and Karl Bartos, with artist Emil Schult collaborating on the lyrics. And it's also featured on the album Dementia Machine, The Man Machine.
Who cannot like that song?
It's cool, though.
The vocal is terrible. It's terribly good. It's sort of not singing, it's talking, but in that very German way. The production is sensational. Every time you get a Kraftwerk track on, the production, it just sounds so clean and beautiful and ordered and very, very controlled. And of course, they were recording most of the stuff, because they used to do 8 or 10 hours in the studio every day, and they called themselves musical workers, and they were recording in their own studio called Kling Klang Studios in Dusseldorf.
Yeah.
Very famous, that's right. And they actually created mobile stuff so they could take it round with them, mobile recording stuff. And also developed a PA. They worked 3 years on developing a PA system that was all coloured grey, the same as their stuff. Anyway, that's Kraftwerk. Beautiful, beautiful. You know, one of my favourite bands, really.
I'm looking at you quizzically because they kind of intrigue me as well, these guys. And what I didn't realise, you know, the term krautrock, well, they were students at the Robert Schumann Hochschule and were part of the German experimental music and art scene. And the Melody Maker actually said, jokingly dubbed it krautrock. So that's where that term comes from.
Wow.
Yes. But they joined a quintet known as The Organisation, had an album out called Tone Float. But what I really like is, you know, the way things like develop and the, you know, evolution is all about change and reacting to change. And that's how you survive. You know, if you stay rigid, you usually become extinct. But while they were visiting an exhibition in their hometown about visual artists Gilbert and George.
Ah, yes.
They saw two men wearing suits and ties, claiming to bring art into everyday life. So that same year, they decided to start bringing everyday life into art and formed Kraftwerk.
Well, that is fantastic. But unfortunately, that's the last bit of the show.
No.
Yes, it's crept up on us again.
Just getting going.
Yeah, I know, we're just getting going. So if you want to contact us, we're on Instagram, on Starlight Campbell, Twitter, Susie and Simon, and of course, Facebook.
I don't know, I usually say that bit, so what else? What happens now?
Well, we're available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes and iHeartRadio.
See, we're swapping it up. I have no idea. I just get so excited about the music and everything that I forget about all that. So we're going to play you out this week's episode of the Supertone Show with a track from Jethro Tull.
Yeah, very unusual time signet. Is it 5-4, is it? I think it is. Yeah, all good.
So next time we see you, we'll have played the Wangratta Festival. And everything is just wonderful. So please enjoy this song, and we'll catch you again later.